The Fan on Demand. Always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. Blue Jays victory version of Primetime Sports. Jays 2-6 in that road trip. Shai Davidi will join us 6:30 to recap that horrible road trip, which ended with a victory over the Milwaukee Brewers today, courtesy of a Colby Rasmus bomb. Well, you know that we spent a little bit of time talking about Johnny Manziel on this show, as indeed every show throughout North America the past couple of days has been talking about Johnny Manziel. We now know that the Cleveland Browns have selected Brian Hoyer as their starter over Johnny Manziel. Some suggestion after the game against the Washington Redskins that the Browns would hold the competition open, keep it open for another game and delay making a decision. But it seems apparent that Brian Hoyer will be the starter. Bud Shaw of the Cleveland Plain Dealer joins us on Primetime Sports to discuss this. Hello, Bud.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Is this a setback for Johnny Manziel?
Well, I think it's the culmination of a series of setbacks, starting with some of the things that he was doing with his free time in the offseason that raised eyebrows among, you know, Browns coaches and officials. I'm sure you guys are aware of what I mean with some of the things that were posted on Instagram. I think they had a heart-to-heart with him at that point. And did not see his behavior change immediately. So I think it just put him a little bit behind, even a little further behind Brian Hoyer, who, you know, it stands to reason was going to be ahead of him just in comprehending NFL offenses and picking up pass protections and making adjustments at the line of scrimmage. So I think what we saw was him come into camp behind Hoyer. I think he had a real opportunity. Had he wowed them with his work ethic in the off season and also picked up what's a fairly complicated Kyle Shanahan playbook, if he had picked that up quicker, I think there was an opportunity. I think that opportunity, the determination was that opportunity had finally passed, or if not passed, they got to a critical point where they felt they had to get behind one of these quarterbacks and tell that guy and everybody in the locker room that was going to be the quarterback going into Pittsburgh September 7th.
Bud, one of your compatriots, Mary Kay Cabot, took a pretty big run at Manziel today, both on Twitter and in her column. She said, as you kind of alluded to just moments ago, he started losing this job right after the draft when he partied his brains out, continued losing it right through the middle finger. The job was there for the taking, and obviously he didn't get it. And I'm wondering, is this just sort of like an organizational shot across the bow for him, or are they really peeved at their rookie quarterback right now?
No, I think it's the former. I think they're willing to chalk some of this up to just his, you know, age and immaturity. But clearly the owner of this team had maybe the strongest words all along by saying he wanted him to come in and act like a backup. And you know, veteran players like Joe Thomas and guys like that were initially saying, hey, he's keeping his, you know, he's keeping his nose clean. He's keeping his head down. He's gone to work. I think the middle finger at the Washington bench, had he played great and been picking up the offense, I think like most organizations, they would have justified or explained that away or rationalized it in some way. But it's the fact that he had not been picking up the offense particularly well, and the nearness to the opening game, I think that kind of also played a role. I think where they just said, hey, this guy, he lost his poise here. He's still immature, and he doesn't quite get it. So I think the residual effect of starting Hoyer is that they hope that he does get it, you know, that he sees not only how professionals go about their business, but he sees that he missed out on an opportunity by claiming for some reason that he was 21 years old and deserved to do what he wanted on the weekends. And that just didn't go over very well with people here.
But you are among many people who've reported that there was, you know, there was a real split in the Cleveland organization about taking him where they did in the draft. Do you think today there's any regret at making this selection?
No, I don't think there's a regret because of the way the selection came about. The fact that they got a number one draft pick that they really wanted in Justin Gilbert, and the fact that they picked up a number one draft pick from Buffalo for next season, I think they felt that at 22, he was a value pick, and that if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. They were armed with picks next year to go after a quarterback if they feel they had to do it.
Bud Shaw of the Cleveland Plain Dealer joins us on Primetime Sports. You know, we had Richard Deitch on a couple of minutes ago, and we were talking about Johnny Manziel, and he was making the point, it's something I've noticed a little earlier as well. You know, a lot of times an organization will draft a guy, and they'll try to put him, I'm not going to say you're going to try to put him in a cocoon or in a bubble, but the criticism of him will be measured, or it will be delivered in such a way, as to sort of mitigate, I guess, any hard feelings. But it seems to me as if right from the get-go with the owner, the Browns' approach has essentially been almost one of tough love, has it not? You know, the stories of him missing the meeting, which, you know, that has to come from somebody in the team. And I have no problem with reporters doing their job or anything like that. But I'm just saying it appears almost as if the organization made a conscious decision to not treat this guy with kid gloves.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. Going back to draft night, Jimmy Haslam has, the University of Tennessee in his background, and he's a very big booster down there, and he's very friendly and knows Peyton Manning very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what the story was when Manziel slept through or whatever he did at the Manning passing camp. He was sent home from that. So I think that Haslam came into it thinking, well, here's a chance to catch lightning in a bottle. We've addressed our new head coach's desire for a starting cornerback. We have picked up our GM. We've addressed our GM's desire for another number one draft pick next year. And here's the, a chance to take this guy, but also with eyes wide open at some of the things that flew around him as a college player. The interesting thing about this is that, they twice made entreaties to trade up in that first round. The first time was trying to move up to make a deal and get Zach Martin, the tackle from Notre Dame. They couldn't pull the trigger on that deal. The second deal, they were trying to move up and see if they could get Brandon Cooks, and were unable to get that done. So it's not as if they had Manziel circled as, the guy that we have to get after we get Justin Gilbert. It was not that was not the case at all. And he just sort of fell to them. And at that point, they had him circled as one of, three guys that they thought were value picks, that if they got into the middle of the first round or into the low 20s, their board told them that they would be getting value by drafting him. So that's how he came to them, and I think you're exactly right that they decided that they were not going to try to nip his, I don't know if I want to call them character issues, but it just his lifestyle. They wanted to nip that in the bud and make him understand that it was going to take, some real professional dedication to make it in this league.
But the one thing, and I know Mary Kay refers to it in her story, the one image that bothered me a bit, because, but I've known you for a while, and, we sort of grew up in the same time. The image of him in the bathroom with the rolled up $20 bill, we all know what we associate that with. And that's the image that really bothered. The other stuff, you'd rather it didn't happen, but To me, it was that sense of, see, that goes beyond pushing the boundaries, or that goes beyond just kind of being a bit of a jackass. To me, there's a suggestion there of total lack of awareness of I guess the power of imagery, and that really stuck with me. And that if I was a Browns fan or a member of the Browns executive, that image would have scared me more than anything else.
Well, it's a great point, and I think that image scared them more than anything else. You know, early on when he had a free weekend and went to Vegas and was shown spraying champagne all over the place, you know, Mike Pettine was like, hey, guess what? I'll bet you there were other guys that are employed by this club who were in Vegas that weekend too, but nobody knows about it. You saw less and less rationalization, and the rationalization completely stopped with that picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, prior to that, you know, he's either pretending to be or is passed out on an inflatable swan holding, you know, the biggest bottle of alcohol that he could find. Mm-hmm. I think that worried them, but they thought, oh, well, you know, he's a kid. Whatever he was doing with the rolled up dollar 20 or whatever it was an alarm that sounded in this organization. And I think they sat down with the owner and everybody else and him in the same room after that and told him that nonsense had to stop. And for the most part, it has, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put the middle finger to Washington in that same category.
No.
That's an emotional response that you would wish your players would be more poised not to do. But it's certainly more understandable than the one you just referenced.
Just one final question for me, but I'm always curious about this. You probably only deal with him in bits and pieces, but what's your impression of him just as a guy?
Well, it's really pretty positive in that when he has been in Berea, which is where it's a suburb here, I'm sorry, where, mm-hmm. where they have their headquarters, when he's been here, he's attended to his job. There hasn't been any discussion of him being out anywhere locally here during camp. Guys that I respect in that locker room have gone out of their way to say positive things about how hard he's worked. So, you know, only basing it on what I've seen of him since camp has started, I think it would have to be positive. Now, you know, there's that question still of whether a guy of his size and his style of play is going to last in this league, and that certainly hasn't been answered yet. I still have second and third and fourth thoughts about whether it makes sense to take him or not. But, you know, yeah, it'd be unfair to categorize him as, you know, a party animal. That has not, maybe the case in the offseason has not been the case at all since he's been here for camp.
Hey, Bud, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Hey, I enjoyed it, guys. Take care.
Take care. That is Bud Shaw, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, a terrific columnist. Just know when he was... I believe he was a columnist in Atlanta before he went on to Cleveland. And we appreciate Bud joining us, Nelly. Yeah, that's, you know, the list of things, transgressions, whatever you want to call them, with Johnny Manziel, the one that stood out to me was that rolled up 20 in the bathroom, because...
You know, you have assumptions
yeah,
as
we
to
have
what
assumptions that
means. That
you're,
yeah. And none of them are good.
No, and, you know, the other, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that alcoholism is any less of an issue than drug abuse. But, I mean, when you're dealing with... When you're doing things that immediately make people think you're snorting a line of coke, which is what the $20 bill rolled up in the bathroom would represent to a lot of us, I would have some concern about that. But again, it is you know, Deitch got me thinking about this. It's true. This is an organization that is not following the norm of, boy, we're going to wrap our first-round pick in a warm, loving embrace and protect them there.
I don't have a problem with that.
No, I don't either. I think it's interesting.
Yep.
It's interesting, and, you know, maybe it's what it's going to take with this guy.
Well, if you listen to that conversation with Bud Shaw, you could tell he's plugged in. You know, when he talks about, well, they thought about trading up to get this guy. They didn't get him, Zach Martin. They thought about it for another guy. They didn't get him. They had a couple of... He knows the way that organization thinks. So he basically says to us that they take Manziel as their second first-round pick, knowing that they have enough draft picks next year that if this doesn't work, they're going to be able to go out and get another quarterback. And so they're not married to him.
No, and in the meantime, you're going to sell tickets, you're going to sell merchandise.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate.
How many jerseys have been sold? A billion?
Yeah.
And the Browns don't need to sell tickets.
No.
But training camp, stuff like that, the merchandise, as you say. So this whole thing says to me is, and if you read that column by Mary Kay Cabot, who also works at the Plain Dealer, that's one of those columns, and I know because I've been involved in them before, where the team is only too happy to you know what it's thinking because they want him and everybody else to know that this is why it's happened and it's your fault.
I will say this about the Cleveland Browns. I mean, you know, obviously they get criticized for a lot of things, but in this instance, there is no doubt why he isn't getting the starting quarterback job. There's no doubt. It's all out there.
It's the finger. That was the final straw.
Yeah. And part of me thinks that when it happened, a lot of people with the Browns probably looked some smiles and just kind of, okay, that's... I think a lot of people in that organization may have thought that that's where it was going.
Yeah.
And
this is the end.
This is the end. And anyhow, so Brian Hoyer will start for the Cleveland Browns. Johnny Manziel will be in the bench. And again... absolutely no reason to think that you've seen the last of Johnny Manziel.
Week five? If you look at Cleveland's schedule, it begins tough. Like, there's three tough games.
Pittsburgh.
I can't remember who else it's there, but there's three tough games, then a bye week.
And then
the schedule kind of eases up a bit, at least is how it looks now.
Yeah.
Bye week, easier schedule. They start poorly.
You're 1-3 or 0-4 or something like that. And
here comes Johnny.
Here we go. Steelers, Saints, Ravens, bye.
So there you go.
And then who do
it's
they play after the bye?
It's easy to be 0-3.
Titans and Steelers again. Well.
Better. It's not the Saints. It's not the Ravens.
No. And, and against a team like the Saints, there'll be so much yapping going on. The Saints and the Ravens against him, it's probably best just to keep Johnny Manziel away from there. If you missed the earlier part of the show, and God knows why you would. I mean, shame on you if you did, because it was spectacular, what with Ken Reed in here and then Elliot in as well. Elliot dug up an item on Twitter that really kind of sparked our interest. And the San Jose Sharks, Todd McClellan, Doug Wilson, head coach and general manager, have announced that the team will have no captains or alternate captains, that they will leave the positions open going into training camp. And then the one thing I don't know if you've contacted anybody, will the players vote on who the captain would be, or will that be GM and coach combining in the decision?
You know, because I was here when it was announced, I haven't had a chance to really contact anybody.
Yeah.
I did get one text saying from another team saying they wouldn't be surprised if what the Sharks decide to do is not have a captain eventually and just go with three
revolving
alternates/assistants, whichever term you prefer. It's interesting. We've been headed down this road. I don't think anybody's surprised that they've decided to do this. They are trying to tell us not to use the word stripped. They're using the word
reassign
or restart, really. And I think, I think that they also made it very clear to point out that if Thornton shows that he's one of the best, he might end up with an A back on the jersey. And I think a lot of people are wondering how Thornton feels about this, and we talked about it last hour, but I've kind of researched it in the offseason. I haven't spoken to him directly, but what I heard from people who know him and some teammates is they believed he would be okay with it. That A, he knew it was coming, and B, if you'll remember, Thornton got the C in the first place after it was stripped from Patrick Marleau.
How long ago was that?
Oh, it was before the 2010 Olympics.
Okay, so it was.
I think if I remember correctly, and somebody's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was the summer of 2009, because he was asked about it at the pre-Olympic training camp that year. So I want to say the summer of 2009. And so, Marleau got stripped, and I think Rob Blake was the captain for a year, and then it went back to Thornton. So he's been through this, and he understands that the organization has done this before. So I don't think that's going to faze him so much. I think he is still determined to try and win in San Jose and see what happens once the season starts.
How do you think I think that this is really an unfair question because we're not there, but how do you think the other players would take that move? Will there be surprise? Would management, for example, would they have gone to Logan Couture or somebody and said, look, we're thinking of doing this? You know, I'm just wondering how the other players, I think your point is well taken. What management essentially saying is they would like Couture and other players. They'd kind of like a new leadership group to
emerge,
to coalesce. But I don't know that team well enough. Will they take it as being that, or will they take it as a sign that management is unhappy with Joe Thornton?
I think they were told,
okay,
in their exit interviews that the expectation is that guys like Couture and Pavelski and Vlasic should take more control of the team. And, you know, to me, the guy who's a really interesting case study here, and I think the guy who might be, I'd be curious to see where he ends up in this hierarchy, is Vlasic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know Vlasic really that well. I got a few chances to talk to him last year. Boy, he is a confident guy. Like, he really believes in himself. Like, when his name started coming up for the Olympics, and obviously he made the team and played very well, like, his reaction was, it's about time some of you guys in the East mm-hmm. started to notice me. And, you know, the teammates would have some fun with him because it's not kind of the hockey way about doing it. And sometimes I wonder if it's a language thing, because his first language obviously is French. But it's pretty clear that he believes in himself, and he believes he should be considered one of the NHL's elite defensemen. So I think of all the guys there who might be ready to say, okay, I'm ready for this, he's that guy.
And now, I don't know if it was you, but I remember somebody, it might have been Healy, it was during the Olympics, somebody talking about how Vlasic could also, he'd become a popular guy.
He's funny.
In that dressing room as well.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. Okay. I don't say anything insightful. Neither does Healy, so it couldn't have been him either.
I don't know who it was. I mean,
probably Huey or Simmer, because they say the insightful stuff.
Could be. I don't know about that. But somebody made that point about just how, because you're right. I mean, for a lot of us in the East, Vlasic, you looked at him, obviously look at his numbers, everybody says he's a good player. That's one thing. But to actually see the guy and get to know him, it just seemed like, you know, there was a thought that
he
was, yeah.
And I think the one thing everybody forgets, Jeff, he got hurt in that series. He missed the last couple games. And I don't know if they win even with him there, but their chances of winning took a serious dive when he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a really good player. And, you know, I think a lot of this is Joe Thornton has been the alpha male in San Jose's dressing room for a while. He likes it. He's the chief needler. He's the loudest guy. His stature as their best player for a long time has kind of been like that. And I think some of the younger players have been uncertain about how to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the organization's way of saying, all right, it's your time. Prove to us that you can be that guy. And that's the challenge.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, because when you were talking about that, I was thinking of a conversation I had with Alex Anthopoulos. And I mean, look, there are a variety of reasons that Alex Anthopoulos made the deal for Vernon Wells. But in talking to Alex after the deal was made one time, he talked about how, you know, sometimes Vernon was kind of he was the union rep. He was sort of the de facto guy in the clubhouse that guys went to, you know, my wife's coming in. Any idea where we should go for dinner tonight? If you're a new player, you go to Vernon. You know, writers would go to Vernon for sort of the state of the team stuff. And Alex wasn't being critical, but he was saying, you know, we thought that perhaps it was time to sort of change the dynamic a bit in the clubhouse. And as long as you had a guy there who was popular and who was essentially part of the furniture, some of the younger guys might have felt a little reluctant to, mm-hmm. you know, to step up. And I mean, that's the only thing you would know if you're in the clubhouse or in the dressing room all the time as a general manager. But I found it interesting because, and again, Alex made very clear, I'm not ripping the guy, but I'm just saying that sometimes when you make a move like that, it's almost as if you sort of put a little more oxygen into the room and let other guys maybe step up, guys that in the past had been in the background. And this could very well be the case. I mean, look, it can't hurt. If you're San Jose, it can't hurt, mm-hmm. because you've pretty much done everything else.
You've made it pretty clear that you want to make Thornton uncomfortable. And the thing is, I don't think he wants to leave.
Yes. Well, that we talked about. That's the one benefit here is Joe Thornton's probably going, staying in San Jose, no letter, going to Nashville.
Well, he controls it.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is I'd rather be where I like being, even if I don't have.
Yeah, he spilled his blood there. He wants to win there.
The Jays won in Milwaukee today. They finished the road trip 2-6. They have tomorrow off. They start a 9-game homestand. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet was at Miller Park, and he'll join us when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're back with the stretch drive for the ninth inning, whatever you want to call Primetime Sports for Wednesday. It is Jeff Blair and Elliot Friedman. Bob McCown's on holidays. He'll be back next week, the week after. Sometime like that. We're happy today. The Blue Jays have won.
I wanted to listen to the song more.
Yeah, I actually like that song,
That's
too.
Great Led Zeppelin.
It is a great Led Zeppelin song. We have no more Led Zeppelin. We hope to have Shai Davidi.
Is he not here yet?
From Miller Park. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably coming up from the clubhouse or something.
He said 6:30. He is 4 minutes and 10 seconds late.
He's like Wilner. I don't know what it is with the guy, the insiders here.
The baseball guys, they're always late.
Yeah, it's not like because McLean and those guys are always on time, the hockey guys.
Not me.
You're pretty good.
No, you're pretty awful. Good.
Ken Reed's the worst. He doesn't even, Ken Reed doesn't even have an alarm in his you know, his iPhone. He writes, you know what he does? He writes stuff down on paper.
What?
He writes stuff down on paper to remind
Who
him.
Who does that anymore? Actually, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal last week that the coach of the Browns is making his players take notes like that because studies show that that's the best way to learn and remember.
If I ever get a chance, and I know we have Shine the Line, if I ever get a chance to teach a journalism course, God knows why anybody would want me to, because the first thing I would say is don't go into journalism, go into law school. You make a lot more money. You make it quicker. Nonetheless, the first thing I'm going to do is tell everybody to hand their tape recorders in, learn how to take notes, because I do believe you learn more.
Shai's a journalism teacher.
I know. That's why I might be asking Shai if I can come and teach his class, but I don't think he'd want that because it's kind of self-defeating. Shai Davidi joins us in Primetime Sports.
You can guest any time.
I didn't say guest. I expect to be paid.
Well, that's going to be a bit of an issue.
Well, screw that then. Give away my wisdom.
I actually preach notes and recording. Do them both. Because then you have the backup to protect yourself in case someone calls you a liar.
I agree with that, except nobody I've covered in the past 13 years has ever said anything controversial enough that they would ever accuse me of saying that they lied.
Touché, but we can always dream, can't we?
I know we can.
Were you late because you were getting another bratwurst?
No, I was late because the game ran late. Just came out of the clubhouse, filed my story, and I've got about an hour and a half or something like that to get to the airport.
So, oh, it's Milwaukee. You can walk to the airport. They'll hold the plane for you anyhow. You're not driving back. I thought you and Madani were dating.
Just from Chicago to here.
Oh, okay.
But it's a bit of a trek to drive back. And there's kind of like nothing around this ballpark. I think like basically the only people who could walk to this ballpark are the Bears who might live in the forest or whatever.
It is true. It's a lovely park, but it really has not led to a massive development around it.
No. No, but I think that there's no development in Milwaukee at all. So.
No, that's true. So were they spraying champagne around the clubhouse?
I wouldn't go that far. They were, I think, mostly exhaling. Mm-hmm. You know, they 2-6 on this road trip against better teams that had spanked them, but not the White Sox, but, you know, the Mariners and the Brewers yesterday that had spanked them. A bit of revelatory about maybe the gap between them and some of the elite teams in the league. But, you know, they found a way. This was like an important game, I thought, for them because, you know, Dickey wasn't great, but he kept it from spinning out of control. And the offense awoke from its slumber. And if they can maintain that a little bit, then, you know, Maybe they can make it interesting.
What was your highlight quote from the post game today, Shai?
That
means there weren't any.
Yeah, R.A. Dickey saying it was time for them to gird their loins for the
gird their loins.
That's not bad.
That's good.
Yeah.
How do you spell gird? Yeah. Is that a G-I-R-D gird?
Yeah, G-I-R-D. I think that's how it is in the Bible as well. So
that's awesome. Kevin Barker's around here. We should get Barker in and tell him that R.A. Dickey wants players to gird their loins. I'd love to get Barker's take on that. So is that okay on a list of R.A. Dickeyisms? Because I sort of use the capricious animal as sort of the everlasting Dickeyism. Right. Gird your loins might replace that. Was he smiling when he said it?
No, he was serious. He's actually pretty frustrated. He's not very happy with the way that he pitched and the fact that he wasn't able to get through six. Mm-hmm. He was upset about the Gomes home run. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't as happy as you might expect, given the fact that they did end up winning the game. But, you know, I kind of admire that about him, that even if things end up working right, he doesn't just look at the W and say, yeah, okay, everything's okay. He's very disappointed in himself about twice not being able to deliver a shutdown inning after the Blue Jays had scored.
You know what? He made a play today that I thought showed that his head is really in it. He didn't pitch well, but there was, I can't remember what inning it was in, Shai, but they had a couple of bad throws today. And then there was another one, and the runner got the third, and it could have gone into the dugout, allowing him to really get a homer out of it. A double and a two base error. And he backed it up and he prevented it from going into the dugout. And I thought that was a great fundamental play that stopped the bleeding at a really bad point in the game for them, because they were in danger of totally throwing that game away. And that was a nice little settled down play by him. And I thought some other guys got the message that he's got his head in the game. We better get our heads in the game.
Yeah, and you know what was interesting about that play too? It's not just that he was able to back up the ball, but he had to, I can't remember why, I think it was because of the hop, but he really had to
make a big jump.
Make a bit of an athletic play to prevent it from getting there. So, I mean, there was a lot of effort required on that. And you're right, I think that was an important play. And, you know, one of the things we talk about fundamentals all the time and how important the little things are. But, you know, one of the points that John Gimmons was making this morning was that, you know, you just try to set your fundamentals right, and you just try to execute as best you can. You prepare as best you can, and then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays are at the point where that's basically what they have to do. And you're right; it is indicative of how much he wanted to play today. And I thought that was a key moment for the game.
Good news for the Jays, by the way. The Tampa Bay Rays have just announced that they've activated Will Myers in time for the weekend. So there you go.
Oh, he's no good.
That'll help the Rays. Shai, this is probably the last chance we're going to have to talk to you before the Rays here. Do you consider the Rays to still be in it?
I think they're in it as much as the Blue Jays and the Cleveland Indians are, right? That if they get on this sort of magical run, and hey, we're three seasons removed from the Rays doing just that.
Mm-hmm.
They were 9.5 out at the beginning of September. So they have a chance, and they can make an interesting, and they've got a great pitching staff. But, you know, you look at the way the odds are stacked against the Blue Jays, the Indians, and the Rays. I mean, it's hard to say they're in it, but they've got a chance to be factors. And all you want, I think all you can do is be one of those teams. Just keep playing it out and see what happens. You know, I think back to the Cardinals that same 2011 season. And they were been left for dead, and no one thought they had a shot. And you know, a couple of leaders of the team called a team meeting and said, "Hey, even if we're not going to end up in the postseason, we're not going to play out the string in this miserable sort of fashion.
Mm.
We're going to do everything in our power to finish out the season strong. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever happens, they make the playoffs on the last day of the season. They end up winning the World Series. And then basically all those teams." That's the blueprint that you have to look at right now. And it's like, for the Blue Jays perspective, it's grim and it's depressing, because that's not what it would have been a month or two ago, but that's what you're left with.
Who's making all that noise next to you?
There's no one. I'm getting some feedback on my phone. I'm not sure what that's all about.
You mean there's nobody near you right now?
Nope.
Awesome. We've got like one of those tied-in conversations.
It's tremendous.
Like this, I wish the guy was talking about something more interesting that we could eavesdrop into.
I did get the numbers 588. It might be a credit card number. Shy, just be quiet for a minute. We might be able to scam a credit card number.
Do some online shopping. Shy.
Can we send the credit card number to Alex Anthopoulos?
Oh,
nice.
Your pipeline to him just dried up.
It did.
Mike Harrington, the Buffalo News, reported today that Dwayne Norris will be making one more start in Buffalo, and then he goes to the bullpen. When do we see him in Toronto? Do we see him this year?
Once the Bison season ends, that would be my guess. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you look at what he's done in his first two starts there. I mean, even if he falls off a cliff tomorrow, I just can't see how you don't come up with performances that dominating. They can use the extra lift in the bullpen, and you know these little incremental gains is probably the best the Blue Jays can do in that regard in terms of player acquisitions right now. So they can try to get some people internally. Hope he gets a few key outs here and there. But you look at Sanchez today with four really important outs for that bullpen, and he's been so terrific to this point in the season. Maybe Norris can do something similar.
Hey, Shai, Dalton Pompey tweeted out that he's been promoted to AAA to the Buffalo Bisons. What's the reasoning behind that? It's his third stop. It's his second promotion this year. It's his third minor league stop. I don't know. I guess maybe he comes up as a September call-up. Is there some reason that this late in the AA season they've decided to move him up?
Well, he probably would have been moved up earlier, but he'd been out. I think he missed about a week and a half, two weeks maybe, with a quad injury. And he just came back yesterday, hit a home run in his first game back, and then got bumped up to Buffalo right away afterwards. And that was something that I believe was on the docket for them earlier. He'd been playing really well at Double A, and I don't know that there was much for him that left to accomplish there, kind of similar to Daniel Norris.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a little bit of a taste for him, a little bit of reward, and you know, it gives him the experience of playing in a pennant race in Buffalo. I mean, they're in the hunt for the postseason in the International League, and the New Hampshire Fisher Cats aren't having a very good year, so they'd just be playing out the string. So he gets the added benefit of that as well.
Shai, on Baseball Central today, Jerry Howarth had some pointed words for Colby Rasmus in particular. And I mean, essentially what Jerry had said, and I don't know if you'd heard this yet, but essentially Jerry had said that, look, he didn't think that the Jays were actually putting their best team out in the field, that the Jays are a better team with Ryan Goins at second base and Anthony Gose in center field. You know, and of course what happens, Colby Rasmus hits a home run. But what do you think the organization's thinking is on that? And actually, let me rephrase that. What's John Gibbons thinking on that? Because there were a couple of camera shots of John Gibbons during this series, and you guys probably saw the feed in the press box as well. He was looking daggers at a couple of players.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, because I think with the Rasmus Ghost debate, it comes down to Ghost is going to give you more defense, without a doubt. But Rasmus will catch a hold of one periodically the way he did today, and he gives you an opportunity to get a lot more offense. And if 1-5, 1-6 was going the way that they can go, then maybe you don't worry as much about the offense from Ghost and Goins for that matter. But the fact is the Blue Jays need to squeeze out as much offense as they can from all the different spots. And that's why, you know, Rasmus is still there and Goins is down in AAA while Kawasaki gets to play. To me, more interesting is what's going to happen once rosters expand in September. I mean, both those guys are going to be up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Blue Jays will be able to pick between them without having to make a roster decision. And so at that point, you know, who knows which direction the Blue Jays lean. I think, you know, there are a couple plays today, you think, at second base where Kawasaki wasn't able to get there. And if Goins is there, you think, okay, well, that's an out. And then, you know, that play that Tolson made in the eighth, which in some ways might have saved the game as well, when he ranged up the middle, slipped behind his back, you know, that Kawasaki has no chance of making that play. So, you know, the Blue Jays are certainly giving up a lot on defense with those guys. And I think basically the opinion switches based on the day. What's the need of the day? You know, if Ghost had comes up and doesn't deliver offensively, you think, hey, I wish we had Colby Rasmus in there. And then there's a day where you need the defense, and you say, well, hey, yeah, man, no Rasmus. We need Ghost right now.
Shai, thanks so much for doing this. Safe travels back to Tirana.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
Take care. That is Shai
Davidius. Maybe we should say goodbye to that Ghost call on the side. Goodbye, Ghost caller, whatever you're talking about. Thanks for your credit card number.
There was somebody else on that line. I thought it was Madani for a minute. I thought maybe Madani.
It didn't sound like him. Like, I heard you say Madani, but I was listening. It wasn't him.
See, I thought maybe they were calling for a cab or something like that. I was going to make a smart-ass comment, but then.
So I remember there was one time when John Ferguson was the GM of the Leafs. He was on with Bob and myself, and his emails kept going off. So we finally just said to him, who's emailing you? And he, like, told us a couple of people. So I was hoping we'd get some similar answers here, but no.
I'll tell you, it's not a cell phone story, but it's something similar. I tell you when I knew I was going to like J.P. Ricciardi.
Okay.
First day I'm down there in spring training, and I've arranged to get into his office. He can sit down and have a one-on-one. I sit down, and the phone rings, and he slaps it in his phone, and it's Jim Bowden. The Reds gentleman.
Yeah.
Jim Bowden comes on, and I remember the words. He goes, hey, JP, dog, what's up? Hey, why don't we shake some things up? Why don't we make a deal here? And so I look at Ricciardi. I get up to move. Ricciardi looks at me and just kind of waves my hand and says, sit down. And then just starts talking. But I felt I'm listening in on two general managers. Nothing transpired, of course. But
what was the offer?
I'm not saying.
Oh, come
it was a minor.
On.
It was a couple of minor
How
league
long
players.
Was this? A decade ago? Earlier than that.
It was a couple of minor league players. It was like some minor league deal. It was that point in spring training. But I remember JP just kind of, anyhow. I was pretty fun.
Yeah, well, it's cool. You sit down, you listen
just
to
sit
that.
Sit down and listen to it. And it was, but that's not the same as having the Ghost cell phone call. I got to find out who that is. The numbers were, I wrote down
the actual numbers?
Well, I got a 588.
Just
I got
so you
a
know,
588.
Just so you know, Shai, he wasn't paying attention to the interview because he was trying to
write
down
I got
numbers.
A 588 and there's a 41 and then it kind of went off. So I don't know if it's like a Visa or MasterCard or something like that.
Did you hear like an expiry date? 0817?
I didn't hear an
like
expiry
that?
Date.
The key is getting the code number. Like what's the special code number on the back?
I didn't get that either.
251? Okay, I got that.
So I like, so there you go. R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey says it's time to gird your loins, Toronto.
Does he mean the fans or just the players?
I don't know. It's just, gird your loins. Hey, is that Shakespeare? That's a Bible. That's not Shakespeare. That's a Bible, isn't it? That's a biblical reference, isn't it? Gird your loins?
I don't know.
I'm fascinated now. I'm gonna have to look.
Do you want me to gurgle?
Gurgle the loins. I said gird your loins, not gurgle your loins. No, that's okay. You don't have to do that. So there you go, Toronto. Jays win. They have a day off tomorrow. You get to gird your loins for at least 24 hours before the Tampa Bay Rays roll into town to play the Jays in the first of a 9-game series.
Job 38:3.
Gird your loins. What is the context in which it is used? That's the one chapter in the Bible I skipped over.
Yeah, you missed that one.
I missed that one.
That's now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me.
Wow. So there you go. R.A. Dickey reaching in. I don't know why I thought it was Shakespeare.
Everything is Shakespeare.
R.A. Dickey reaching into the Bible to sort of put into perspective the Blue Jays. Chances. It's loin girding time. Elliot, thanks so much for helping me gird my loins today.
My pleasure. It. You know, nothing more important than girding.
No, and we'll continue to gird our loins tomorrow as well. And again, the Jays have the day off tomorrow. They'll start a 9-game homestand, first of three against the Tampa Bay Rays for Ken Reed, Elliot Friedman, and a host of others, including Bud Shaw, Richard Deitch, Don Brennan, Shai Davidi, and the mystery guy on the phone next to Shai. It's Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us in Primetime Sports. We are the nation's most watched and listened to sports talk presentation. Have a great night, everybody.